Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 136 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And this is another Cantina conversation with our book reviewer, Megan. And this time she's joined by the authors Ahsan and Shaquille Ahmad. Now, the Ahmad brothers are here to discuss their most recent book that just released in February, Wild Sun Unbound. This is following up from their debut novel, Wild Sun. Now, this interview here has a little bit of spoilers for their first book. So if that's a concern of yours, read the book and come back. And if you're joining because you're fans of the Ahmad brothers and you want to hear more about how they came up with these stories, some of the writing processes, some of their inspiration, down to how they designed the book cover, this is a great conversation between Megan and the Ahmad brothers, and we hope you enjoy. Without further ado, here's the Cantina conversation.
So we are here with Ahsan and Shaquille Ahmad, the Ahmad brothers. Welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today about your story. We've got Wild Sun, which is the first book. And then Wild Sun Unbound is coming out on February 16th, correct? Yes. Okay, cool. All right. So yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to meet with us. I'm really excited to, offer our readers a little something extra, a little something deeper as they, browse through books and stuff. I always love just giving them a little something extra. And even if they haven't heard of this story or haven't heard of you, like hopefully this conversation will pique some interest in your work. So, I'm really excited and thanks for taking the time. So we'll dive right in. So I've done a little bit of background knowledge, research on the two of you. You come from kind of like pretty different industries than writing and publishing. So why don't you like kind of go over your background and maybe what, you know, where your creativities kind of led you to write this story?
Shaquille, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. First, before I get into that, I was curious what you thought, Megan, considering offline, we were just talking about how you read both titles and what you thought of the title of Unbound. It was something that had gone around internally with us, the publisher and some other folks. And it was a little out there in terms of like wording choice. But what did you think?
There you go. I thought about that too, but we'll try to spoilers for the first book are okay because it's been out for a while, so we'll try to be spoiler free for the second book. It's once you get to the end of the first book, it's like that okay, they made it. Against all odds, somehow they made it happen. I think it mostly speaks to Saren's character. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
We say Saren, but Saren, yeah, it's up for interpretation.
Okay. So Saren's character for sure, because the first book, she's just struggling. It's very known that she is, attempting and failing over and over again to escape. And the second book, Unbound, it's like, it's what can she do when she's not, she's an escapee, when she's not a slave anymore, or she's an escaped slave. Like what, now we see what she's capable of. And that's kind of, the title of that book. It's very, it's also a little enticing too, because it's kind of like you see both titles next to each other. And then maybe you get a little spoilery if you read the title of the second book, if you haven't read the first book before. So like, it piques your interest even more, I think, once you're like Unbound and you're like, oh, okay. So it's like, maybe you kind of know, but then you still want to find out like how that happened. But then it's like, it speaks to Saren's character arc. I think like this is like, she's more so reaching her, what she's capable of and what her fuller potential is in, when she's literally the change.
Yeah. We found, and I swear I'm going to answer your question. We found, the word so lush in being kind of like a descriptor. You could use a lot of different things when folks again are for the first book up against a huge battle and huge oppressive forces holding you down, right? And We just really liked the title. At first, I just had to ask because a lot of people were like, well, I don't know, it's just kind of oblique or whatever. But at the same time, I just felt I really liked it, you know?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It's interesting, you know, that there's a lot of inner workings of that go on in the process of writing and editing and releasing a book. And so it's interesting that you guys weren't that confident in the title of the second book, or like maybe you got a little pushback because maybe it didn't click or resonate with some people. But like I said, apt is
exactly.
Is a good that's my opinion. It's
glad fitting. To hear. Yeah. All right. And now to the question at hand. So in terms of the background, like individually as people, Ihsan and I were both born in Queens at a hospital that no longer exists, unfortunately. As New York is ever evolving, and we didn't really grow up in New York. We grew up more or less in the kind of the Philadelphia area. We've since relocated back to our roots, if you will. You know, and a large part of our storytelling, and I've resisted, you know, having this sort of conversation early on, but you know, I think the more and more we've had these opportunities, the more I've kind of opened up to folks like yourself, that particularly those that are easier to communicate with and generally enjoyed the read, is, you know, we're first generation son of Pakistani immigrants, right? And so we've been able to see the world from two very distinct lenses. You know, we definitely have a good deal of the Americana side of it, you know, because, you know, we grew up here and that, you know, all our socialization happened here. But at the same time, you know, we would come home and, you know, we were raised Muslim as well. So we were fasting during the month of Ramadan, you know, getting those questions where the worlds were melding, right? Where at school, like everyone's asking you, why aren't you eating, right? And you're being singled out at a time where at school in like sixth or seventh grade is sometimes the last thing you want to be.
Yeah.
Again, it wasn't like necessarily a totally negative experience, but by virtue of being young and potentially incapable of navigating those situations like easily, it gave us an opportunity to also sear each other to one another, because our experience we found was just unique to us. So meaning we have another brother, he's older than both of us. And we realized like we could have all the outside experiences, but we also have a pretty unique, you know, home life as well, and how we came to understand the world. And a large part of that was for us, like film in particular, we just absorbed so much like film, and we liked all manner of it. And I can't say until we got a little bit older, did we understand we appreciated the storytelling in particular, and why certain film resonated with us than others. And we always liked smaller cast of characters, you know, a little bit more taut, but really like purpose and like driven into these characters. So by the end of it, you've really gone through the ringer with them, right? And maybe like a Sarin, man, you might have, you know, noticed we really stack some incredible odds against this person and some other folks.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something?
Yeah. No, I guess I was just curious as to, did you, so, you know, you're working in film, did you ever try to write a screenplay, or did you kind of just gravitate towards novel, like prose?
Right. Yeah. So we didn't work in film. We just liked film. So just to be clear. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. Right. But,
I'll let Ihsan kind of just chime in since I've been talking a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, I guess at the stage you're talking about, we didn't work in film, but later on we went to sort of dive into film a little bit on the production side, and I can talk about that. But
yeah,
I guess to your question, or to your point about how our backgrounds led us to where we are. I mean, and Shaquille kind of really, you know, talked into our sort of emotional and maybe a little bit of a spiritual struggle there. From on the other side of that, it's like it was, you know, was sort of this American identity that we had. So it's like you have that juxtaposition of your, you know, this sort of spiritual identity at home and everything that we're going through. But our on the American side, we went through high school, college. I have a bachelor's degree in political science. Shaquille has a I think a bachelor's in psychology and a master's in statistics.
Right.
And so we kind of went down that trajectory, and it was a Fortune 500 cosmetics company. And Shaquille moved to New York and started working in the lighting industry. And so we were like basically going down these roads, which tie into sort of our backgrounds is like, you know, you're going to work, you're going to get an education, you're going to go to college. We definitely failed our parents in that we didn't become doctors, lawyers, or engineers. so that's kind of a South Asian or Asian sort of dynamic. But we dove into sort of corporate careers or business careers. But parallel to all of that, there was always this sort of urge. And I think that's why Shaquille's alluding to it from us, is that our identity, because of that questioning that occurred early on in our lives, there's a deepening that also occurs. There's a sort of critical, existentialism that we hit us in early stages in our lives. We're always kind of guys that ask, what's the meaning of our life? What's our purpose? What are we doing here? Well, and so we're, you know, as much as we're like following a certain track, a big chunk of us that was always thinking about, well, finding meaning, and where we found the most meaning was where we experienced it. And that was film. So when we would watch, we were heavily into drama and science fiction related drama. And when we would watch something like that, we were just, and we could be captivated. We were captivated by that ability. So the ability of a writer and a filmmaker to come together to create beautiful characters that make you truly emote and feel something. So like later on in our lives, in our early, late 20s, we were just basically on totally different sort of trajectories. I mean, I was in a different industry, different world. Shaquille was in a different industry, different world. We always kept in touch, but we weren't really collaborating. And then in our early 30s, after we, sowed some oats, we went to get and we're like, hey, man, let's do something together, right? I mean, let's really leverage the fact that we have a lot of this stuff in common. And for us, the common denominator was, like I said, film. And we started our foray into writing a screenplay, all the way to the point where we were starting to put a fledgling production together. And we realized one thing that was really important in making film is money, typically.
Thing.
So we were like, okay, we're producing this, but we don't have sort of the capital. Let's take a step back for a second and really start to put together a practical understanding of what it makes to be on a production and be in film. So we started, long story short, we started a wedding film company, that was going to be able to allow us to get a sense of what it's like to, what frames per frames per second should we be shooting in? How should we, guide us to real sense of cinematography and putting images to our, to elicit emotion, right? So all those things that were critical.
Sure.
And then after that, we're like, okay, we did about two to three years of that company. And we started to say, it became very formulaic. And we're like, well, we started realizing we needed to drift or direct the ship back to where we were originally charting towards, which was our own, creating our own original work. And then that's when we got back into the screenplay. Mm-hmm. And then the Wild Son evolved out of the fact that it was a backstory to one of our characters in our screenplay. We started to write a character, and we're like, "Well, let's suss out this backstory." And I wrote this kind of primer about her, her backstory, and then that turned into a bit of a larger scale, a primer on the whole saga that the Corvos and the universe is wrapped up in.
Mm-hmm.
The universe, and we really dove into a specific element in that story.
Okay. So what kind of like researcher because you talk about, that's really cool that this book ended up being like the backstory to what you were already kind of working on. So like what kind of research went into it? Cause I think we were talking about it before, creative names for places and regions and people and the tribes that you have here, and even the names of the people. You know, because I noticed some patterns in like double lettering, even with certain characters, and then not with the other characters. And so kind of like, you know, what kind of research went into like kind of thinking up these different worlds and people and you know, these, because there's essentially different like species of, you know, or different types of human beings, or like that's the gist that I got.
Sure, Shaquille, do you want to handle that one, or you want me to take that one? You're on mute, Shaquille.
Thank you. Yeah, I know. You know, I was saying, yeah, we're going to start a fan club. You're going to be president. I mean, you're getting nitty gritty with it. I love it. Yeah, that's really cool. So actually, this ties in nicely to what we were just talking about, the unique identity. A large part of this, too, was a lot of times as we look back, is there was just not a lot of representation of like us. Meaning like there weren't a lot of Pakistani lead, you know, heroes and things like that. Right. And, or heroines.
Right? Yeah.
And then, we wanted to kind of infuse Wild Sun, which is like some aspects of other cultures. Right. So a lot of the naming convention comes from, twists on Arabic words, in particular in the Arabic language. And that's why you'll see like certain things are named like are derivative of like bush, like we call it skora. It comes, you know what I mean? It comes from the Arabic sounding word for the very thing. Yeah.
So there's for everything in the novel. So there's a naming convention for all the different races. So what we did was start off in sort of a kind of a structured world building. So before we sort of married everyone together in the narrative or in the arcs, we talked about, okay, what are the races? What are their backgrounds? So there's like, as much as there is like writing actual, like the novels built, there's like as much notes in terms of like, here's the race. Here are the Polanians, which is what Sonus belongs to. Here are the Akobi, which is the tribe that Sirin belongs to. And in that, each of those tribes or each of those groups, had, you know, they had their own backgrounds in terms of where they were at, in terms of the like are they in the Stone Age or are they in the Bronze Age, and based on that, what is the language that they utilize, what are the naming, what are the conventions around the types of names they would use, and then we would weave that into sort of how we name them, words or singular sort of adjectives and exclamations and things that they would use that would make them unique as a race within the book. So it's like everyone, like we have like pretty in-depth character backstories and race backstories for each of our characters, that talks about, you know, their temperaments, some even histories involved in terms of how far back they go in Corvos, what they eat, all cultural aspects, what kind of where their music is derived from, all stuff that, like, not everything makes it into the novel, but was critical for us because we wanted it to feel organic and real. And we just felt like that level of depth is critical towards bringing out characters that you can that feel real, right? And resonate with us to the point where we just finished book two and we're like, our thought of how things should resolve. Now we really have to listen to them as much as it is just us forcing them to be someone or something. So all that to say is that, everything that I appreciate the fact that you read that into the book, because there was a tremendous amount of work that went into that world building, you know, all the way through how the Vitari clans are named. There's like different ciphers we have in the way that each of the families are named. They have real world corollaries. So once our fandom gets large enough, someone will do all that research and Prada will be like, oh my God, this is just an anagram for something else. Or this is like, you know, that was definitely very deliberate and very intensive. Frankly, it was a lot of work.
No, I mean, I was an English major in college. So I guess like when it comes to reading, like I'm just used to analyzing literature for like academic purposes, but that's why I enjoy doing this kind of cool stuff, because it's almost like, you know, book club, but like with the authors themselves, and like where you can kind of like, you know, I could speculate, but then to like just kind of like pick their, you know, pick your guys' brains to see like if I did I miss something or am I totally out of left field. But no, like I definitely got that the meticulous like planning and you know, the thorough naming and the patterns and stuff like that. And so you know, I definitely caught on to that. And so it was just like interesting to me how, you know, like noticing those differences, like the similarities and the differences and like why the certain choices were made. And then how, you know, it's because it's almost like, you know, there's these groups of people and, you know, even when you get to the different minds in the world, you know, there's, it's so crazy how, you know, with Sonus's region that he's enslaved in and like he's, you know, there are a lot of parallels between him and Sarin. And so, but I, you know, I think I like both of them a lot. And then it's also really cool how like Talazir,
based,
he's a scumbag,
him off of Hassan, by the way,
like,
in terms
the
of
second,
references.
By the second book, you kind of yeah, like,
how dare you?
No, go ahead.
How
please.
Dare you?
Okay.
Some of yourself always goes in the character. No, go ahead.
Oh,
I think both of us got into.
So I picked the worst possible one. Yeah. Siblings. Yeah, no, because Talazir is kind of a scumbag, but then it's like once you get to the second book, you kind of get to know him a little bit better and his background and where he's like,
oh,
I almost
wow.
started feeling
yeah.
sorry for him just from, you know, like almost. And I think that's something kind of just speaking to your ability and your talent to create a character and to create a backstory, these backstories that are like, you know, multidimensional characters, which is, you know, it's not easy to do, especially since for you two studying and trying to get into film and considering screenplays, it's a different ball game, you know, switching gears and not having the luxury of, or maybe the challenge, of expressing that on screen versus, you know, just your
totally.
Reader's mind is kind of the screen and trying to do it that way. And then like kind of going off of that though, you know, have you two have worked together before? What were like the biggest challenges or lessons learned either jumping into this project or
I'd say like accountability
together?
For sure. You know, I mean, it was early on, it was
sure, yeah,
in the wedding film stuff, it was just obviously because it's such a pressure cooker of a day and there's a lot of things riding on you. And an interesting little tidbit from being inside that world, meaning like, let's say you're making wedding films, is like, you have absolute control of the day. Like the two most important people defer to you on everything. You know what I mean? Because you're memorializing one of the most important moments of their life. So we, you know, taking that accountability through, you know, and taking it seriously.
Oh yeah.
And then in working together, obviously being siblings on top of it, it can get heated from time to time, but we have, we're generally positive and forward thinking people. So we, you know, we try and give each other, there's a psychologist, Carl Rogers, and this concept of, unconditional positive regard is always starting from a place where you're coming from a good place. Even if it's like a collaborative difference and or just a matter of tension building up within an experience and trying to move forward in you know, and never dwelling too much on certain more difficult aspects of it. I don't know. So I'll kind of open up to you there too a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think you're more or less hitting on the big things. Look, in any sort of collaborative creative effort, it's about, what there are good things that can come out of bad partnership or basically bad collaborators, right? Because it's like, if you have the talent and strength, it's like you can have musicians that don't like each other, but they're going to produce great music together. We had the benefit of not having to go through that because based on our shared history as well. And there's sort of this deliberate, I think from a maturity standpoint, we've both, we were raised right, I guess, in terms of like kudos to my parents. We tend to give other people, and I'm doing this, I'm not even speaking for myself, I'm speaking as like watching Shaquille go through this process, right? It's like that's what I've seen. So it's like, just on like, there's an unflinching like charity that is always given to the other person, that like, you know, everything is coming from like, hey, we want this to be the best. And if they believe in a good idea, letting them, you know, air it out. Like there's not a lot of ego involved. And I think that's critical for collaboration. So there wasn't ever a point there. I mean, there's always certain points depending on the time of day you catch us, you know, where you're more or less agreeable. Right. But I'm saying in general, the ethos is that the best idea is going to come forward, and we're going to allow that to not always come from us or come from like the individual. So I can throw out an idea. I want, you know, I'm thinking of this for Sonus's arc, or hey, here's how we resolve this particular segment or this particular couple of chapters, right? And you know, we poke holes in it, we pump it up, we're able to kind of weave in and out without all of that stuff that kind of holds you back, because there's so much ego involved in your own idea. So yeah, I would say that that was kind of the more challenging piece of it, because that kind of state does require a little bit of constant sort of constant effort to kind of protect and keep yourself in sort of this nice vibration, especially as you're talking about, you know, 90,000 word novel where you have to keep momentum going and doing it under sort of our own time pressures along with a publisher and things like that. But the good thing is we put a lot of effort into the structure of it. So a lot of our back and forth came early, where we're like talking about real structure, and then after we like agree on like sort of the scaffolding of the novel, then we can just focus on execution. And then a lot of momentum carries you there. So you're like, oh, great idea. That's awesome. Let's do that and do this, do that. So we're much more agreeable because we have a shared vision of where we want to go.
That makes a lot of sense, because I think I've only read one other book in the past year and interviewed where it was written by two people. And I don't know if you've heard of Devastation Class by Glenn Zipper and Elaine Mungin. And it was a sci-fi story too. And they come from the TV and short film industry. And so I'm seeing a lot of commonalities, but I guess they used to date. And so I thought it was really interesting why they still worked on this project and they were still able to produce something really cool and a really cool story. And I'm seeing a lot of the same, like, it's always a challenge working with people, and especially if the passion's there. And, you know, maybe there are some things that you're married to, that you're really attached to, and that maybe you have to fight for, whether it's like a certain writing style or a certain scene or maybe certain decisions that the characters would or would not make. And so I always think it's kind of interesting when it's like, it's different when, you know, when it's just you coming up with all this and putting it on the paper, meeting these deadlines, versus like you have another collaborator who's just as invested as you are and has just as good ideas and is just as passionate about this project as you are. And so I imagine that there would have been challenges there as well, especially between brothers who, you know, at the end of the day, you're probably calling each other assholes or something.
That's a given. Like, early and often.
I'd be remiss if we didn't. We grew up with plenty of punches and wrestling and all that other stuff. Don't get me wrong. You know what I mean? I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the bourbon fueled or edible fueled sort of creative collaborative process. We're going into this Saturday, hoping to have something that we're working on something as well. And we just have a particular process. We go 15,000 feet up into the air, and we love living up in the clouds when we start the ideation stuff. And it's so fun. But what's great is we try and anchor it into a larger universe. So the screenplay tied into Wild Sun, this new concept that we might be working on, which isn't necessarily Wild Sun 3, is also linked to the world. It might be in a backstory of a backstory sort of deal. And it's just we love that portion of it. So there's a good deal of you know, fun along with it, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So what were the kind of like a two-part question. What were your the most difficult scenes or parts to write? And then what were your like favorite scenes or parts to write, both either, you know, either one for number one and number two, or both the whole story?
That's a tough question. I've got answers, but you want to go first, Shaquille? All right.
Yeah. So it's not, go ahead. Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out how to kind of approach this one, but one of the toughest scenes was might be obvious, but I guess that just is the, I'll be honest about it. So, the sort of attack scene between Talzir and Sirin. So the initial attack, sure. That was challenging from a couple of different angles for me. The first being is just trying to understand and hit the right points, because that particular part of the narrative is told from Sirin's perspective, because we hop between perspectives. So to really get in sort of that headspace, right, of where her head would be at. So trying to find that balance of like not injecting too much of ourselves in that moment and allowing Sirin to feel the feelings that she would have felt. And to not fall into some sort of a cliched kind of category, right? It's an attempted like sexual assault scene, basically. So, how do you really parse that and deal with that? So that was one of the more challenging, and we went back and forth on it, got feedback, got all these other things in it, and felt like we did it honest and true to the character. But just one of the scenes where we're like, you know, that one, that was one of the harder scenes. One of my more, another hard, difficult scene was, again, this is like a big spoiler for book one, but was basically Velaryk. And Velaryk was one of my favorite characters, kind of the anti-hero. I'm not going to spoil
it, dude.
But
don't spoil
it. He's one of my favorite characters. So that was challenging. But my favorite scenes to write were the ones in which Marl actually was physically involved. We're like, how do we make a character that's menacing but never around? And that's where Marl kind of, you know, like he that's the role that he plays. So anytime that he has overt action, to me, was just always fun and badass. I think even in book two is one of my favorite scenes of all time with Marl. I think, you know, probably the one I'm referring to.
There's a moment where it seemed like he was kind of in shock. That's the gist that I got. if that was even possible for him, even the, how the other characters kind of respond to his response to his situation was pretty awesome.
Marl has such like a transformational arc. I'm not going to really say more to it, but like, you know, it's just kind of like start one way, but you know, there's a lot to it. And at first he wasn't necessarily my most favorite to write into it. But he did provide us a vehicle for like action in particular. Because we did want to like ground a lot of the action in like typical like ballistics and other stuff, like very real world in terms of the military style stuff. Obviously there's a lot of futuristic aspects to it as well.
Right.
I would agree with Asan, just say I loved, we love Velaryk. I you know what I mean? I'll tell you, this Saturday we're working on something, an offshoot with him. We love that. We love his character.
There's definitely more to him because he's like on the brink of retirement. So it's, and then he, you know, you tell he's got some demons and it's like, you know, where,
yeah,
what happened?
Those are the best characters.
Yeah.
Those
it's
are the
like
best
what
characters.
Like
yeah,
what
yeah.
happened? Yeah, I want to know.
Drug addict, right?
That's exactly right. The fact that, you know, his writing that his introduction scene is, I love it. I mean, it's just him, you know, just kind of like mulling over like what the hell happened, you know what I mean? And, and using drugs and very real.
Yeah.
Right?
That was really cool too. Just like what he got the drugs from, like a little bug, I'm guessing, like a little insect. He was like, kept it alive to get. I thought that was really unique.
You cool. So You hit something, I think, earlier on when you were talking about Tal Azir and his arc in book two and how that you thought that was interesting. And that really resonated because that was extremely deliberate. So one thing that we like to do or definitely lean towards is not to create one-dimensional characters, no matter who they are, especially on the villain side or like the sure. foils. So yeah. you kind of related, you right. said, with Tal Azir, and that's exactly what we wanted to come across. No one is that one-dimensional, and we don't. I think that you can be menacing and on the side of wrong, but still have depth and be a real thing. And our world is filled with those kinds of actors. Mm. They're either shrouded or things like that. But Tal Azir, you know, that's we wanted to create a real three-dimensional character and really have interesting and real motivations for that. So as much as there's motivation to do good or do the right thing, that's not always apparent no matter what side that you're on. So we knew that there was a backstory. There had to be a real backstory for Tal Azir as well as to why he turned out the way he is. He's not just a whiny prince. There's a real sort of, you know, like obviously something led him to become that way and to be that sort of, you know, how do you get to do some of the pretty diabolical things that he does and to not value life in that way. So that really was important to us.
Yeah. And especially just, I saw it, you know, it's like, obviously it's not an excuse for his attitude and his behavior. It's just like an explanation. It's like you kind of, you get insight into like who he is and how, what he's dealing with, like amongst his ranks and even with his family. And it's, you know, you kind of see like, okay, it makes sense why he would end up like, you know, kind of, you know, maybe, and especially in book two, he feels like he needs to prove himself and he has to right wrongs and he's embarrassed and shamed and mm-hmm. his family's embarrassed from him. And it's really getting on him. And it's funny because it's, you know, he's got this like vengeance against Sarin and Sonas, but it's like at the same time, I was slightly conflicted because I kind of felt bad for him almost, but at the same time I was like, well, no, the only way for him to redeem himself is to achieve, you know, get his revenge. And I don't exactly. want him to get his revenge because he wants Sarin and Sonas to like, you're rooting for them a million times more. And you know, especially with all the new circumstances and little help that they get in book two. No, I that's what I really enjoyed about even though it's like, you know, you definitely don't want to like him, but I enjoyed getting to know that him a little bit more just because he's a bit complicated. You know, and he's being presented with more information and it's, you know, and I think, I don't know if Marl is the only person that he yeah. can trust really. Even as, you know, vicious as he is, he doesn't really look like someone who you'd want to, you know, to confide in.
But I'm sure, like, great. A cup of tea, you know, with Marl. I'd love that. I'd love to have a drink with Marl.
Right? Yeah. A little like vent session. Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah. Well, we're sorry for the conflict you felt, yeah. but I can also tell you that's it. That's exactly the internal conflict we wanted to have when creating a character like that.
Yeah, no, mission accomplished. No, for sure. I got that. So don't you fret. Let's see. Hour's almost up. I hate it. I'll go, we could try to power through these last few questions because I do want to know. Although this is kind of a loaded question, which character do you identify with the most? And then maybe, no, let's start with that.
I can answer for Shaquille. It's probably Yarny, I guess.
Oh. Inside jokes. You know what I mean?
But it's still funny. He's getting you back for that exactly. Tal Azir comment.
You can go first, Shaquille.
Yeah, there you go. That's fair. I mean, I just, you know, I liked... you know, I like Velaryk as a character, but my own personality in terms of me being a rational actor is I'm very like Sonas like, right? And I know he's one of the more main characters, but I like I like Sonas's thought processes and how he goes about problem solving. Maybe too much deliberation from time to time, but I definitely skew towards him.
So was the question who we relate to or who we like the best?
I like who you like. Yeah, like relate to or identify with.
It's tough. I promise I'll actually give you an answer, but I'll give you my non-answer first. It's just because each of the characters, like I mentioned, we really sat down and thought about them. So it's like hard for you not to pour a little bit of yourself. And I mean, obviously you're like, okay, this character is going to have this characteristic and that characteristic and this, you know, you set sort of these sort of core characteristics around them, or attributes that determine who they, you know, how they make decisions and things like that. But I really related to Sarin. I think that she just has this indomitable, like rebellious nature, even when it's against her own interest. Do you know what I mean? And like, there's sometimes good motivations for what she's doing. Sometimes they're reckless. And she's not just this like heroine for the sake of it. We didn't want her to be cliched. We didn't want her to be like someone who can't get beat up or can't get a black eye or can't, you know, or doesn't bleed because she's just like this super ultra powerful kind of female warrior thing. She's very much not that. She has like skills and talents and all those things, but is navigating a very real world full of thorns and vicious creatures and vicious people and all those things. So for her to keep her spirit, and, you know, Shaquille alluded to this, that we're sort of like, we're very positive. I find myself to be like very capable in sort of overcoming a large amount of plight. Not to say that in this first world sort of life we're living that we can compare to some of the stuff that people are going through, but just that desire to always move forward and put one foot in front of the other, no matter what, was just so critical that that we get that across in this character. And that's why I it resonates to me. Her struggle resonates to me, and how it will end for her, we don't know, or maybe we do. But you know, we just, whatever it is, we want to ensure that it's like, nothing's going to be this like cookie cutter sort of ending. This is a real character, or with real sort of a real person. And, not, you know, it just, regardless of how deeply and how hard you fight, it doesn't always end up well, or it doesn't always end up with this nice bow wrapped neatly. So we really just did that.
Yeah. So yeah, break the hearts of your readers in the process, but you know,
the dedication, Megan, to book one is actually, I'm not going to, you know, I won't say it, but I will tip people off. A
couple of articles
too.
That we
so, they? It's J'DA. It's essentially like Joan of Arc, right? In the story, we love the movie. The Messenger. The movie's great. The Messenger in particular. And then obviously the story of Joan of Arc in particular, how one small figure in a vast kind of like context could make a massive impact. And so that it was a little tip of the hat to that. Out of curiosity, Megan, who do you identify with?
I don't know. It's tough. Like I love Sarin. I think she's so pragmatic, and she's kind of like, she's not that, she's, I'm going to try to use words here, because so she's very pragmatic. She's very logical. She's very much like for herself, but then she's also like, no, I need to get as many people out as I can. And because before she spent all this time trying to escape, and then her fellow like slaves were resentful because they're getting punished for her attempts. And, you know, she also knows that there's a chance that, you know, if her and her group are successful, that the people who had no idea, like they're a different shift or something, they will might also face the repercussions of their actions, of like the people who they had no idea what was going on. So she's very like pragmatic, and she's very logical, and she's very like, you know, this is a life or death situation for her, but she's also let you see that soft spot with Yarny. You see that soft spot where she does have a capacity to be compassionate, and she does have like, yeah, she'll attempt to cut your throat. But at the same time, like she will, like, you know, like she, her heart, like you could see that she, you know, she does have that compassion, and she looks out for her people. You know, she's not always out for herself. I think maybe at the beginning, she couldn't afford to have any attachments. Like that's the gist that I got, with the book one. And, but then by the time, like, you kind of get to know her character and you get to know, like, the closer and closer that she gets, like, she realized that she needs help from people to really achieve the end game, the goal. And she can't do it on her own. If she's going to be, if she has the most chance for success, she needs people. And then because of that, she had to learn how to, like, approach people that way. She had to be, and she had a, you know, because I was like putting myself in the mind of, and then the setting of like being, you know, slave, like these people are probably starving. They don't have much, you know, in terms of possessions that they own, like they don't really have anything other than they're just waking up, they're doing their work. They're, you know, they're enslaved by these people who are, or aliens who are just that, you know, much more technologically advanced, much more powerful. Like they're bigger, they're stronger in every sense of the word. And so, you know, they're very much like outmanned, but then she's like, she's still trying. And then I'm imagining her almost like not necessarily being defeated after that attack, but then it's like, because she's got a clear like mark from her attempt, and people are like, well, kind of like what happened. And then, you know, I just really, at first I was like, you know, I don't know if I would act like that, but at the same time, I really enjoyed where her character arc was going. I really appreciated, because I, if I were in that same boat, I don't know if I would have been as fearless. And especially since like she also has that tie where she like continues to pray to like that, God of battle, which I thought was really interesting too. Because it really gives another level to her character and her spirituality. And, you know, she's still, you know, you would think if your people had, been defeated against all resistance, you know, I'm sure there were some, you know, there were some wars and resistance when the Vitari first landed. You might think that there'd be no faith at all ever, after, you know, I think what it's been a few years since that happened, you know, just day in and day out, just being abused and worked to the bone. And I would think that your soul would get crushed or your faith in any gods would be crushed. But I thought it was kind of fascinating also that part of her character, she just continued to like, you know, even though she kept failing, she prayed to this god every time and then she kept failing every time. But, you know, it was, she didn't, you know, she, it didn't falter her. She still, you know, kept that faith. And so, I think, I don't know. I guess maybe at first I didn't necessarily like identify with her. I was kind of like, well, she's being kind of cold. She's being kind of heartless. She's all for herself. Even if that was a tough decision for her to make every time. But then towards even the end of book two, you see her really like being more of a team player and a leader, and she's got compassion and she's looking out for other people. Also because she doesn't really have a choice, I think, because she knows that if anybody is left behind, that's more chances for them, her and her group, to get caught and for nobody to survive. And even I think at this point, there was one point where she was straight up like, we're just surviving, like this is just our lives now, we're just gonna try to not get killed, try to not get caught. And but she had, you know, she kind of just sucked it up, even though every step of the way she just sucked it up and she did what she had to do. And I think those little parts of her personality and the strength of her character, I kind of identified with a little bit. But I also like Sonus too. Like he's kind of funny, you know, and I found him as a funny character, even though he's like smart and he also is compassionate. And he's also, you know, he makes tough decisions too, but you're just like, that's what I loved about how you told the story at a different points of view, because in book one where it's traveling through the grapevine of they're hearing this person is planning to do this can you wait until this moment? And Saren's even like, what? who does that? Like, how does that even happen? But she's like, okay, fine. Like, what? Like, oh, we'll wait. And it ended up like lining up. So, you know, that's why I was like, kudos to you guys for just writing it and telling the story so beautifully, because it kind of, that back and forth style really does deliver that suspense. And it's kind of funny where, you know, the reader knows, mm-hmm. but the characters, like, they're inside the picture. And so they don't get it. And then you're kind of just, as the reader, I'm kind of just like, oh, come on, like, I'm waiting for it to all come on, let's do, you know. And especially with the end of book two, I think the last quarter of book two, I was just like, I kept flipping, like, you know? And so I was like, okay, come on, like, do it, like, let's get there, you're almost there. I know that was a really long way to answer your question, but I think, yeah, no, I would say there are parts definitely with, you know, to answer that, like, at the beginning with Saren, not so much. I questioned a lot of her choices, but then towards the end, I was like, no, okay, I see where she's going with this, and you know, where, how this is going to affect her choices even going forward too.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you say it all, because like when you describe it, to hear it described is like, you hit on like a lot of the key thematic elements in how you're describing it, from let's say spiritual zealotry to perseverance, right, against larger odds. These are like, in terms of the overall story, it's not reinventing the wheel, right? It's a force, you know, that's coming to colonize another force through power and oppressing and enslaving, and the use of natural resources is another thing that's built into the story. So to hear you describe it the way you are, it's cool that you're definitely keen to some of these larger elements, which is great.
No, for sure. I'm a huge bookworm, and so I've got a little bit of practice of you know, and I want to make sure that I kind of like read into things how they were meant to, and so that, you know, just to be prepared for when I'm like writing a review about it, and also just being able to talk to you guys about it. I want to make sure that I'm getting it.
Super impressed with your depth of knowledge, and honored, frankly, that you went into it, are thinking about it that much. It really just, you have no idea, it means a lot to us that you really, you take that level of effort into the work. I mean,
I've decided that I'm going to have you on our next interview. And
Exactly. If you could just replace the keel and come do interviews with me, Megan, that'd be great.
No, you were awesome. That's really cool.
Oh no. Yeah. I appreciate it. This story was so cool. I was telling Asan earlier that I wasn't, you know, when there's such creativity, there's like a different, like the sci-fi fantasy element, with the naming conventions and like out the names for the places, you know, and the people are very out there. But once I got at the hang of that, then I was like, I was in. And so, this is a really cool story. Really fascinating, really like the human spirit, like, you know, knows no bounds. That's kind of like the overall, just that I'm getting the overall message, and it's inspiring in a way. And, you know, so you kind of mentioned like, is there, I'm assuming there's going to be Wild Sun right. 3, right? Because you can't
no,
do that.
No, this is it. That's it, Megan. We're done.
okay, that's it. Interview's canceled. I'm mad. I'm mad at you guys now.
definitely. So I think are starting to put pen to paper here on Wild Sun 3 by midsummer. We'll probably start midsummer with some series of planning, you know, before that or close to that. So I think Wild Sun 3, if we're,
is it going to be trilogy?
Well, so
or do you think
we're kind of actively in those discussions? So Wild Sun for us is a universe. This is one small story. Yeah, and I say small considering the scope, one story within that much larger universe. So I think that there are going to be other sort of spin-offs. For not spin-offs per se, but like other ways that we sort of tell aspects of that story. For example, you know, Shaquille mentioned we're thinking about where, you know, maybe something that's in canon for the Wild Sun universe that has to do with Velaryk, but not necessarily part of the three series, you know, arc for Wild Sun.
and not necessarily the same or multi-medium and some provocative stuff. It's pretty cool.
So not just not just that. So there will definitely be a Wildstone 3. And then there's other larger elements. I mean, you know, we talk about the Red Region and sort of there's a whole universe in terms of what the Red Region is all about. And believe me, that's like carved out. Yeah. It's just no one knows about it, but there's a whole sort of real level of depth to there. And we will explore that more in Wildstone 3, but not to the depth that we could explore it in something alternate. So,
like a side
or a different series that covers that,
like,
but it's definitely Wild Sun, right? Or tied into that. Right now, we want to open it up. I think we also want to take to be in the film medium at some point, or you know, film or serialized content, things like that. Visual, basically, being the visual medium for the story at some point, whether that's Wild Sun or something else, we're kind of discussing, but. Yeah, that's sort of where we know the story can come to life and want it to come to life, either in the reader's mind or in the visual medium, which we always, like you said, sort of are rooted in. But we're not stopping here, certainly.
So do you know, like, you have an idea of, like, maybe what readers can expect in other installments?
I'm trying to get a sneak peek. You know what I mean?
I mean, what else am I doing? So literally the only reason I'm talking to you guys. So
if someone asked really nicely, where could they get a little chapter in book three? I'd say
It's already been planned out. Yeah. I mean, in terms of the arcs, arc resolutions are done. That's
not
has been
totally
done
accurate. You know? I mean, they're like, here we go. You want to do this now?
You want to do this now, buddy?
We've got our initial shots at it, but as we sit down and get in the cauldron, you know, things evolve, right? So we know where the story wants to go and how we kind of know how it's going to resolve. What we don't know is how it's going to get there. You know what I mean? I would say probably for Wild Sun 3, we're talking about late, probably early 2022. So, you know, the first couple of months of 2022 is probably where we'll target. We're kind of basking. We're a couple of weeks away from Wild Sun 2. So we're going to try to support that and get sort of some momentum going. We're going to get into the creative mode again in the midsummer. In between now and Wild Sun 2, there will probably be something else. Wild Sun 3, there'll probably be something else. So that's what Shaquille was mentioning on. So this little project we're going to do as a spinoff will definitely be released before Wild Sun 3.
Oh, there was a question I had before I wrap up here. Oh, yeah. Last question, I promise. The covers, did you guys get a whole lot of say in the covers one and two?
I don't know did you like it? Let me ask you, did you like
it? No, I was just curious because I know for some writers, they do get a lot of say and some they have no say whatsoever, or they might give their feedback and the publisher is kind of like, oh, well, that's nice, a nice opinion for you to have, but too bad we're going with this. And so I was just curious because I think, the cover of one, I was like, I didn't know what to expect because, you know, it's like, wait, what's going on here? And then once I got more into the story, I was like, okay, this makes sense. I do like the cover for number two a little bit better. So, you know, I was just curious as to how that whole process
went. Let me just mention that there is the cover for book two, we actually went ahead and redid the cover for book one. I don't know if you saw. Okay, you saw the okay, cool.
I did see that.
I guess first, just a quick shout out to our publisher who is amazing. It's Rick Lewis of Uproar Books. He's the founder of Uproar Books, but he's been fantastic. Just a huge supporter of ours and vice versa. We're just very lucky to have a publisher of his caliber, behind the whole, all the works. That being said, we fought very hard to have creative control on the cover. It was one of those challenging things where we just had, like I said, from an artistic standpoint, we have a real vision or ideas for where we want things to go that marry with our level of taste and quality. And so that doesn't always jive with someone else. But Shaquille, what was your take on our saga for the cover?
Yeah, I mean, again, we tried all manner of artists and stuff to try and see our vision come to, you know, to be visualized, right? And it was actually a friend of he's noted, Kirill Pashkov, did the first cover for us. And eventually, though, I'll shout out Lance Buckley did our Unbound cover, and we fell in love with it, like the amount of detail. Yeah. And he's just a great graphic artist. And so we did a reshoot with a forward, essentially, as like a kind of a Wild Sun 1 relaunch. And so we used Lance Buckley to redo cover 1 with the green background. There's some like symbolic aspects to it. If you'll notice, like Sarin's kind of looking isometrically on the in kind of towards the book, right? And the second one, it's more of her in profile as well. And in the third one, we're hoping maybe potentially to see her kind of looking away. And there's some subtext there, you know, as well. So it's, you know, we don't leave just the storytelling to the writing. We want it to just all be a really cool package and stuff like that. But yeah, I hope you like them. And the detail that came from Unbound, it was really cool. And then we loved how he did the trees and everything for the first one and redid that.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I was just like, yeah, I was just curious. Like I was saying before, there are some, you know, I didn't really understand. I didn't know that, you know, that authors sometimes just, they have no creative control or input. You know, and I guess it depends what you could get really lucky, like you guys did, where you're working with someone who's awesome and who, you know, who wants that collaboration versus, you know, other publishers who are like, you know, no, it's okay. We got this.
Have you heard of a horror story?
Don't worry about it.
A horror story where an author's like, I hate my book.
And it's only been a couple times, I think. No, because I don't remember particularly specifically, because I've, you know, I've done quite a few interviews, but I think, there's been a couple times where, they kind of have some feedback, and then they were, they ended up being a little pleasantly surprised. And so they were okay with what came about, even though they didn't really have much say in it. So, that's also a way to be fortunate. Yeah. It's just like, well, even though I didn't have any say, at least I really like what came out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool. And I did notice that you guys released with a new cover that more so matches, is more a little more consistent with the second book.
Yeah,
the cover of the second book. But no, it looks really cool. I was just curious. We'll wrap up here. This was an awesome conversation, you guys. Seriously, I really enjoyed this talking to you and picking your brains and talking about you know, the characters and the world and how your guys' background, like, you know, all your experiences and, you know, culturally, spiritually, your upbringings and all that, you know, kind of brought you here. Cause you know, whatever hard work, whatever processes and methods, that you guys have in, you know, when you're writing and editing and all that, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, cause it's working. And I'm really excited for you guys. And, you know, it's good luck on number 2 coming out. So we've got Wild Sun, which is available now. And then Wild Sun Unbound comes out on February 16th. So Shaquille and Hassan, thank you so much for taking the time and, you know, best of luck. Oh, and congratulations on your baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
2 months old. I almost passed out. What did I do?
Yeah. Sorry. I thought it was a given. It was like, just like, wait, what happened? What did I do? Because I think we were working on scheduling. I just had a baby boy too. So I was like, congrats. Oh, I completely get it. Yeah. Thanks. I was like, No, I completely get it. Like, if you want to wait another month, I don't
honestly,
like,
I'm understand. That you're I'm here totally. And you know, you look rested to some degree.
Oh, no, so, thanks.
You know, yeah.
Thank you again for your time. Really appreciate all that insight. Like Asan said, it means a lot to us. You have no idea.
No, I appreciate it too. And I'm excited. I'm excited for you guys. And good luck. And February 16th is almost here. So, you know, and once that, you know, I'm going to be waiting. I'm going to be watching you guys for more Corvos.
Anytime.
More, you know, stories from
knock on our door. World. Absolute pleasure, Megan. Thank you so much. This was great.
All right. And I'd like to quickly thank you for, and hopefully you come back and join us for our weekly Nerd News Recaps in order to ensure that you get our latest episodes. Hey, please give us a rating, review, and subscribe on whatever channels your whatever podcast players you're listening to. It goes a long way towards helping us and building out our community. And with all that said, thanks again, and we'll talk to you again next time, nerds.